Just as with the John Bible studies, some people say, are you going to speak about prophecy again? And yes, I am. So this will be the final sermon on that. And so anyway, it has, to me, it's an interesting subject. It's talking about basic things in regard to prophecy, and this will be the final sermon in that series. So this will be part four. And so we're going to cover, you know, we talked about that you could divide prophecy into three different segments. We've talked about the first two segments. The first one is talking about the common denominator that is common in prophecy is Christ coming and his return, his second coming. And then we talked about the fact that the second part of it has to do with prophecy and the descendants of Abraham. And then we have the third category, which we're going to talk about today. This is the fourth part, but the third category. And that can simply be labeled the Gentile kingdoms. The Gentile kingdoms. So if you ask the simple question, how are Gentile nations addressed in prophecy? How are Gentile nations addressed in prophecy? Well, God does so in a very specific manner. He addresses them in a specific way, and he brings them out both in the Old Testament and in the New. And as you think about the Gentile kingdoms up to the millennial kingdom, the Gentile kingdoms are used as instruments and tools to carry out God's punishment upon the children of Israel. So the Gentile kingdoms have been primarily used to punish the nation of Israel as they fail to live up to the commitment they made in regard to the covenant. Probably the prime example that we could go to of a Gentile nation that God used was Assyria. And Assyria is mentioned in Isaiah chapter 10, specifically verse 5. And there he describes Assyria as the rod of my anger. So the rod is going to be used to beat Israel, the rod of my anger. And so basically an entire chapter is dedicated to Assyria, the rod of God's anger. And it's Assyria was to be a tool in God's hand. And as long as they accepted their role as a tool and lived within that role, then they were going to be fine. And so they were the tool, and they were to keep in mind that they were not the user of the tool. They were the tool in God's hand, and they were not to overstep their bounds. Because if they did overstep their bounds and go beyond what God wanted them to do, then God would punish them worse than he punished Israel. So he made that clear, and he made that clear to various of the Gentile nations. And what happens with the nations as they come after Israel is almost without exception, they don't heed God's warning to just live within what I'm asking you to do. Don't get carried away. And usually what happens is they get carried away and go way beyond what God wanted them to do. And as a result of that, then God turns around and punishes them. If you look through the prophets, there is one word used in regard to a long series of Gentile peoples, and that one word is woe. Woe to this particular nation, or woe to that particular nation. For instance, woe to Egypt, or woe to Tyre, or woe to Sidon. And if you go through all of the woe chapters, you come to a simple situation. The statement of woe upon you, if you read the text, will eventually come to the place where the woe is upon you because of the way you treated the sons of Abraham. And so they were God's instrument. They could punish, but as I said, they go way beyond punishment. It's just like, you know, as parents, we can punish our children, and we can go way beyond what is a reasonable punishment. And that was what was happening here. As a point in time where God had said, I am finished working with both of you, that is Israel and Judah, for the time being. And we looked at in the last sermon that God said that I'm going to wait 2,520 years to fully give you the blessings that I promised to Israel. So I'm going to allow that time to pass. And it was only at the beginning of the 19th century that God really began to pour out his blessings upon Israel. And so between the downfall of Israel and the time when God fulfilled his promises to the patriarchs, the world was essentially run by the Gentiles. So God removed Israel and Judah, and the Gentiles basically were the ones who were ruling the world at that particular time. So the Gentiles ruled, and the Gentiles would rule and as God allowed them, and God raised up different nations to rule. And they would exercise great political and military power, and it all leads to an end point, which we'll discuss here today. And there is a theme in all of this that we sometimes forget when we think about God and dealing with prophecy and dealing with Israel and Judah and dealing with these Gentile nations, and that is that God will be glorified. God's purpose in all of this is that God will be glorified. And you look at what the reason is, that God is the one who's in charge. And God basically says this because as a nation would get carried away and go beyond what God wanted them to do, then the focus became on them and their power and their ability to wield that power and their ability to take over and gain control. And that wasn't what was to happen. All the glory was to go to God. And when they went beyond the bounds that God set, then the focus was on them, not on God. And that's, as you look at the end of the age, God is going to bring down the nations. Why? In order that he will be glorified. That's what God is going to work out as he works out his purpose at the end of the age. In the end, God will ultimately be exalted, glorified, and honored by his creation. And so that's where God is headed in all of this, that God is going to be the focal point. The very thing that Isaiah warned the Assyrians of, if you can exercise the assignment with humility, then I will be glorified. But Assyria lost sight of that, and they were very interested in their own glory and their own power. And they began to exalt themselves. Look at the nation of Assyria. And it wasn't just Assyria. What did Babylon do? Look at our great nation. And they lost sight of God. They were instruments in God's hands. You know, it was for that very reason that God spared Nineveh in the days of Jonah. Because as you look at the city of Nineveh, they were Assyrians. They were a bad people. They had inflicted a lot of pain and hardship and suffering on the nations around them. And they had done it repeatedly over a long period of time. But Jonah came to them, he preached to them, and he said, if you don't change, then God is going to destroy your city. God's going to destroy you as a power. And it just so happened that the king at that time took them seriously and declared a fast, and they all fasted. From the king all the way down to the animals, they all fasted and beseeched God that he would not destroy them. And what were they doing? They were giving God the honor and the glory and in humility exalting God. So why wouldn't God spare them? Which he did. So that's God's approach to dealing with the Gentiles or anyone else. As they humble themselves before God, then God is willing to be patient with them and extend his grace to them. So God will demonstrate his might and majesty upon Gentile kingdoms who choose not to give him the glory, and that's going to be the story at the end of the age. So that brings us to the prophet Daniel. The prophet Daniel. Daniel and Revelation are both roadmaps to understanding Gentile prophecy, but they are roadmaps of different highways. Both of them end at the same destination. And what destination is that? They both end at the coming of Jesus Christ. That's the end point in the road. They follow different paths, but they're both going to the same destination. Daniel's focus is primarily on the political structure of Gentile nations and the succession of those nations as they rule and rulership changes. So Daniel introduces the nations, and the first one he introduces is Babylon. And so he deals with Babylon and brings up Babylon and three other successive kingdoms that he discusses in the book of Daniel. And when you look at Daniel, then Daniel focuses a lot on the image that God allowed Nebuchadnezzar to see in vision. So Daniel revealed the vision to Nebuchadnezzar and told them about this image that would be set up with a head of gold. It would have arms of and belly of silver. It would have waist and thighs of brass, and then you would have the fourth kingdom that would be steel and ceramic clay. So all of these were a vision that Nebuchadnezzar saw, and so Daniel was given understanding of that, which he told Nebuchadnezzar about. And he revealed to him exactly who the head of gold was. He said, "You, Nebuchadnezzar, are the head of gold." So people that have looked at the prophecies that are revealed in Daniel, basically they've seen these four kingdoms, and people have not had any doubt about the fact of which kingdoms they are. And so as time went on, Daniel fell out of favor with the rulers of Babylon. So there came a time when, who's Daniel? Who was this guy? And we come down to the time of the last king of Babylon, Belshazzar, and he's having this great feast, and he finds that there's this writing on the wall. And he said, what does this mean? Obviously, this is not normal. There's something significant about it, but nobody could tell him what it meant. So then somebody said, you know, there was a person who revealed prophecies to your grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, so maybe we should call him out of retirement. So they went and got him, and Daniel revealed exactly what it said. It said, basically, you've been tried in the balance and been found wanting, and this is the end of your kingdom. And so Daniel was promised all these wonderful things, and Daniel basically said, I'm not going to need them, because tomorrow it's going to be a different kingdom. You're not even going to have the chance to give them. I'm certainly not going to have the chance to enjoy them. So he interpreted the vision for Belshazzar, and Belshazzar was pleased with that, but Daniel didn't get to enjoy all of the things that he was promised. So the very few scholars argue about the four kingdoms mentioned by Daniel. And as you look in the book of Daniel, Daniel provides us a geographical roadmap, which begins in the Middle East with Babylon. As I mentioned, Nebuchadnezzar was that head of gold, and expands to form the Medo-Persian Empire, and expands further to Alexander the Great, followed by the fourth kingdom, the Roman Empire, which extends to the east and also to the west and to the British Isles. So all four of these kingdoms were revealed in Daniel's prophecy, and there's pretty much agreement on what those kingdoms represent in what Daniel was able to see. One of the great challenges of prophecies is to respect what it says, even when, in our day and time, they may not fit what it says so nicely as we would like. So we look at them and they may not fit exactly as we think they should. But we also have to realize God inspired this, and however they work out is how God inspired them to work out. And we just may not see it yet, but in time, we will see with clarity. So one of the great challenges of prophecy watchers is to force a size 10 prophecy into a size 6 slipper. So, well, I think it's this. And so regardless of whether it fits or not, we're going to make sure that size 10 goes into that size 6. That's not going to work any better for us than it did for the ugly sisters that were mean to Cinderella. It's not going to, only a certain foot's going to fit in there. And God has a specific idea of how it's going to fit. And that doesn't mean people don't keep trying. People keep trying to fit things in the way they think that they should fit. And no matter how much you try, unless it's the way God has laid it out, it's not going to fit. So the end of the age has been occurring ever since Jesus Christ disappeared into the clouds above the Mount of Olives. And people have tried, they've looked at the scriptures, they've looked at what the prophecies are, and they've tried to make them fit. And you have all sorts of ideas that have been put forward since Christ's time and are still being put forward to this day. As time passes after the writing of Daniel, most of what took place in the book passes into history, so it's fulfilled. You know, we had those four kingdoms come. Did Babylon come? Yes, it did. Did the Medo-Persians come? They certainly did. Did Alexander the Great and his successors come? They did. And did the Roman Empire come? Most certainly they all did. They all came. And as you look at the book of Daniel, most of it is historical. However, when you go to Daniel 11, then we began to look into the future. It's the most complete and precise prophecy in history, and it takes us through history in such a precise way that commentators tell us there is no way that this could have been written as prophecy, something to unfold in the future. So they see it as something that was written after the fact. That's not the case, but that's how many commentators see it. So, but all as you look at that, you find that all of Daniel 11 is history until you get to verse 40. And when you get to verse 40, from there to the end, then you're talking about prophetic, certain prophetic things that are ultimately going to come to pass. And as you look at the book of Revelation, which was written by the Apostle John, approximately 600 years later, the Apostle John understood the prophecies given to Daniel, but he sees them in a different way. They're both looking at the same picture, but John is inspired to write about them in a different way. And so God gives John an update that's important in one great respect, because the focus in John's day was not ancient Israel, but the Church of God. So when you have Daniel, Daniel's focus is upon kingdoms, conquest, territories that would be established. But when you get the Apostle John writing, he's talking about prophecy in the sense of the church and the ultimate playing out of things. Now, it's not that God is no longer interested in Israel. The fact is, God still is very interested. All you have to look at is the book of Romans and look at Romans chapter 9, 10, and 11, where Paul lays that out and said, God has not cast away Israel. God is still very interested in Israel. However, God's focus is not on Israel at this time. They're basically out of the picture until the right time when God is going to bring them back into the picture. So God is focused in a different way in the book of Revelation. And God gives John an update, and it's very fitting that following Jesus Christ and the establishment of the Church of God, that the scene that unfolds is one of conflict and tension between true and false religion. That's what, you know, as you see Revelation playing out, it's talking about the false religion and its impact on things. Another thing, Revelation is updated by adding the Church of God. So you had Israel in most of the Old Testament prophecy until God moved on to speak about the Gentile kingdoms, but God's not interested in Israel after the coming of Christ and his death and resurrection. He's interested in the church. And so what plays out prophetically involves the church, which is, we know, the Israel of God. but the spiritual Israel, not physical Israel. So where does, as you look at the book of Revelation, after the introduction in chapter 1, where does John go? John goes to the churches. Beginning in chapter 2 and chapter 3, he talks about the church of God and the different manifestations of the church of God throughout the history of the world on up until the coming of Jesus Christ. So the church is God's focus after Christ's death. And Revelation helps us to understand that. So we have seven churches that are revealed in Revelation 2 and 3. And until the seven churches are introduced, we don't move on to the scroll that becomes the centerpiece of that entire book. It's seven seals, it's seven trumpets, and it's seven last plagues. So the church of God is brought into prophecy at the appropriate time. It's brought into prophecy at the appropriate time. Once it's founded, the church was established in 31 AD, and the church exists, and God is working in the church and through the church, and he's going to continue working with and through the church until the end of the age, until the coming of Jesus Christ. So as we look at the subject of prophecy, and we've gone through three previous sermons about this, and this is the fourth, what are the takeaways from what we've looked at? What are the takeaways from what we've looked at in these sermons? And the main takeaway is that we're seeing prophecy unfold before our eyes. Things are going on. Is it the end of the age? Absolutely. That is going to play out eventually. But we can look at what's going on in the world and we can say, where are we at? And we can make some determinations about that. And from looking at the Old Testament and God's dealings with Israel, we can see how God dealt with a people. So he dealt with the people of Israel in a certain way. And you can go through and look at 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, and you can see how God dealt with the people of Israel and Judah. And one of the main things that you see in those books is that God repeatedly sought to get Israel to turn around. He repeatedly sought for them to turn back to him, to repent, and to begin to fulfill the covenant. And he pleaded with them. He sent the prophets over and over again to wake them up, but they never heeded the prophets. What did they do? They persecuted them. They killed them. They didn't heed at all. It was rare that they heeded one of the prophets. So you can see this play out in Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles. And you can see how God deals with people. And we can see that he worked and worked, as I said. He was very long-suffering with them. And so that is a model of how God is going to work with people in this age. So he worked with his chosen people at that time, and God is going to work the same way with people in our time. Our nation continues to decline gradually and incrementally in areas that God said he would take away or problems he would create within those people he's dealing with. So God's observing what's going on, and God is dealing with people just as he did in the Old Testament, and God is still dealing with them, and God is working out his plan. So God sees what's going on. Now, you have to realize God said he would bless Israel. Did he? You go back to 1800, and what's taken place since 1800, obviously God did. But you look at where we're at today, is God still blessing Israel? Is God still blessing Israel? And as you look at the Leviticus and Deuteronomy, it tells you that there would be certain things that would unfold if you did not live God's way. And as you look at what's going on in our world today, are we living God's way? Are the descendants of Joseph living God's way? And as a result of that, is God blessing us? So that's something we have to look at and seek to try to understand. And We can see that unfortunately it appears that God's blessings are being taken away, and unfortunately you're having curses that are coming our way. I mean, look at all you have to do is look at what's taking place in Afghanistan. We said we're going to pull out. This isn't going to be Saigon. We're not going to be helicoptering in there to pull people off the roof of buildings. And then what's happening? We're having to go back in and deal with this to save the people that are still there. So we see these things unfolding, and they're things that we need to be observant of. And so it's going to be a, you know, it's not going to be a spectacular event, this catastrophe that takes place all at once, but it's going to be a decline which you can watch unfold. And there may come a point of catastrophe, but it's not going to just be something that takes place over and over again. It'll be something we need to keep an eye on. A caution we need to consider is that bad times and end times are not always the same times. Bad times and end times are not always the same times. Consider, you know, we're looking for the day. We don't know the day or the hour, do we? But we look at the world and we see certain things happen. If you go back to World War I, that was such a terrible conflict, and the death and destruction was so amazing. What did they label that particular war? They labeled it the war to end all wars because of the slaughter, the carnage. It was unbelievable what took place, and people had never experienced it. You know, whole droves of young men just mowed down with machine guns. Never experienced that, so they called it the war to end all wars. Nothing could be worse than this. And then what came? World War II. And it was worse. It was worse. Sadly, it was worse. So they said it's the war to end all wars based upon their observation. How could it get any worse than this? Well, it could. And we have to realize that it can. So time is still going on, and we still don't know the day or the hour. We still don't know. We have enjoyed the post-World War II prosperity, and I mean, I was born in 1951. The war is over. The Korean conflict may have been going on, but I had no clue about it. And we've lived from 1950 on as the best years in the history of the world. Are any of you still comfortable? We mostly are. We mostly are. We're comfortable, but that's where we're at. But that doesn't tell us everything. So we have to realize, yes, we're comfortable, but will the comfort last? Will the comfort last? Just an anecdotal situation here, and this still amazes me. My daughter-in-law is from California, and she is from a neighborhood that's a nice neighborhood, nice homes. The people are not they don't live in palatial mansions, but they're nice homes. And my daughter-in-law, her family's lived there for 30 years. Well, the last time we were over at their house, there was this video that her mother had sent her, and they have a video of somebody. It's at night down the street, and they are robbing a house down the street. And in this house, they had this great big safe. And what did they do? The people that were robbing the house got this great big safe, and it's on the second floor. So you think, well, how are they going to get it out of there? All they did was bring it to the edge of the stairs. And did they shove it out the back?
Down the steps.
Down the steps. Boom, boom, boom. So anyway, that huge safe caused a lot of destruction on the way down. So eventually they got it outside, got it on the truck, and left. But that's at night, and if you look at California, it's just part of what's going on in California, and I guess just last week it was happening on another street right close by. So that, I think that and other things going on in California convinced my daughter-in-law's parents, we're moving to Texas. So they decided it's time to get out. But that's just something going on in the world that most of us would be shocked by. We've never experienced something like that. But it's becoming more commonplace, unfortunately, and we live in a comfortable, quiet neighborhood, but is it going to stay comfortable and quiet? Or where you live, is it going to stay comfortable and quiet? I hope so, but we don't know. So things are that we're used to are not the way things are everywhere. So we've got to be aware that things are unfolding and they're signaling to us where we're at as a society. So we have to keep these things in mind, and the purpose is not to depress you. The purpose is to just let you know that we don't know the day or the hour, but we still have to be observant of what's going on around us. And there are some rules we need to keep in mind, and the rule number one is this. If you are a prophecy watcher, don't force prophecy to fit your mold. So don't take that size 10 and try to slip it into a size 6. So don't try to force it in there. We live in a time when there have been more publications concerning the end of the world than at any other time in history. And people have made all sorts of predictions. Have they come true? Almost all of them haven't. So does that change prophecy? No, it doesn't. I know people became very disillusioned with the church when it made the prognostication that Christ was going to come in 1975. And when that didn't happen, a lot of people took a serious nosedive. But the point that they needed to keep in mind was that they lost sight of, so what if they got it wrong? They got it wrong. Probably they shouldn't have been making that prognostication. But what you have to realize, the prophecy is still going to happen. I'll always remember a song that this guy said that don't say it's not going to happen just because it hasn't happened yet. So that's something to keep in mind. The Bible tells you this is going to play out. And once you're looking at it in hindsight, you're going to say, whoa, I know what this is all about. But you're looking back. You may not get it right going forward, but you can look back and say, this is the fulfillment of prophecy. So prophecy is still certain and will play out exactly as God laid it out. The second point is, let the kingdoms live where God put them. Let the kingdoms live where God put them. And this takes us a step further in this don't force prophecy to fit your mold. So where are prophecies going to play out? How do you know where to look? Well, you can go and look at places where past prophecies that have been fulfilled have played out. So if you're looking at the prophecies found in Revelation, where have most of those prophecies played out? They've played out in the Philippines, haven't they? So if we want to understand, we have to look at the Philippines. No, it's not the Philippines. They played out in Europe. So if each and every one of them has played out in Europe, then that's probably the place we should look. Even though we can say, well, Europe, it's a mess, and how is this going to play out? We can say, I don't see any way this is going to play out. I mean, I feel that way, but you know what? That's me. That's not God. God's in control, and it's going to play out exactly as he said, even though we can look at the picture and say no. I know somebody said that the prophecies concerning the beast and the false prophet and all of that and it's talking about the United States. Well, as you look at that, that may fit in certain ways, but is that where prophecy has played out historically? No. We've received the blessings, but when you look at the prophecies that Daniel was talking about and that Revelation backs up, they took place in Europe. So you got to look at Europe. And you say, well, it's not happening yet. That's the point. It's not happening yet. And as you look at Europe, you have to say, well, eventually it will. Now, how it's all going to come to pass, I don't know. But it will. And you can be assured of it. So we need to let the kingdoms live where God put them. The third thing is watch world events, but don't rewrite prophecy with current events. Watch world events, but don't rewrite prophecy with current events. The Bible tells us to watch and pray. And many times we've taken that to mean we need to watch what's going on and make all sorts of predictions about it. And that's tempting to do, but you also have to realize we can do that, but we may get it wrong also. So don't set your heart on it. What does the Bible really want us to watch and pray about? It's not whether you get, well, I called it, that guy's the beast, I knew it. Or this is going to be the false prophet. I knew it, I could just see it. Well, have we made predictions about the false prophet? Well, yeah, we have. Have we made predictions about the beast? Oh, yeah, we have done that too. But guess what? That guy's dead. And we didn't get it right. So we have to realize that these things are going to play out and allow them to play out. And as I said, we look back, it'll be 2020. So what does God most care about? And something that you have to realize is that we may not know exactly who and what and all the players are, but that doesn't matter. The only thing that matters to God is where you're at spiritually. That's all that matters to God. That we are watching and praying, and we're watching, where am I at spiritually? Where am I at spiritually? Is God going to come back to this earth, which he is going to do, and is he going to find me so doing? That I'm taking the truths of God and I'm living by them. And I'm not worried about the beast. I'm not worried about the false prophet. I'm not worried about all of that, because when it comes down to it, God's not going to say, you get an extra 10 points because you got that right. It's not going to matter in the big assessment. What God's going to look at, are we living his way of life? And you know what? If you are living God's way of life, you're going to be on solid ground. You don't have nothing to worry about. And to me, I've looked at, you know, Mike, and the experience back in 1995 with the split in the church and all the confusion at that particular point in time. I have to tell you honestly, I didn't know. Okay, what's going on? I didn't know. But you know what? God is a merciful God. And I wanted to do the right thing. I tried to do the right thing, and God in his mercy said, you don't get it, you don't see the big picture, but I'm still going to be with you, and you're going to be okay. And we were. And the same is true for all of us. As we depend upon God, focus on God, and practice his way of life, it's all going to work out. It's all going to work out. So that's the perspective that we have to have, and not be trying to figure out every detail. And how does this fit and that fit? That's all interesting, but that's not the key that God wants us to focus on. So, the last point, because something isn't in existence today doesn't mean it won't be when the time comes. Because something isn't in existence today doesn't mean it won't be when the time comes. As we look at a prophecy, we cannot be sure there is going to be a political entity that's going to give backing and power to a religious entity for a short time. That seems to be what the scriptures say, but do we see that as we look at the world today? That's what it says, so we'll have to wait and see. Where are those political and religious entities in that part of the part of the world when past manifestations of the fourth beast have unfolded? As I said, that's in Europe, and we need to continue to look there. Also, you look at the chief religious entity that is, it seems like it's going to be a power in the end. How much power does that entity have today? Not much, really. Or we also have to realize maybe it has a lot more power than we can see. We can't see everything. So what we watch is for the simple facts, whether we're looking at the woman on the beast. So what is a woman? What is a woman? It is a church, isn't it? It's a church. And so we don't have to know exactly all the details about it. And a woman can be the true church. A woman can be the false church. And it's going to ride the beast, it tells us. So we'll see how it plays out. So what we watch, we want to watch, and we also realize that the two witnesses will come, and there will be a beast and false prophet, and they will come in God's time and in God's way. So there is a day promised. It's not figurative. It's not allegory. It is a promise that is real. And one part of that promise is that there are going to be miracles at the end of the age. Are the two representatives of God going to be able to do miracles? They are. They're going to be able to call fire down from heaven. They're going to be able to declare drought and different things as part of their ministry. So we'll see. And are the opposites going to be able to do miracles? Oh, yes. They're going to be able to do miracles like you've never seen before. And they're going to powerfully influence the world, and they would influence even the elect if they weren't the elect and they were aware of what the Bible has to say. So these things are going to happen, and they're going to intensely impact the world. As you look at Europe, it's interesting when it comes to Christianity. Europe is very proud that they are, in the words of the Apostle Paul in Romans 1, proud of their intelligence, proud of how smart they are, proud of the fact that they're not religious, they're not caught up in all of that nonsense. They're proud of that. And all the superstition and nonsense that's involved in religion. And underneath that particular view is a lot of pride. And pride is going to open you up to other serious problems. It's a world that scoffs at religion and bows to Darwinian evolution, reason, thought, and philosophy. And their beliefs and their philosophies and their disdain for religion have not equipped them in any way, shape, or form to contend with a real miracle. So when they begin to see miracles done, they're going to be right on board with that. Things that you can't do. They're not normal. They're beyond nature that are taking place before their eyes. So somebody explained to me that the people in Europe are not religious, but they are very superstitious. So when they begin to see this kind of thing taking place, it is going to be enticing to them. And they are going to be taken in by it, unfortunately. And when you look at religion, they don't have any respect for religious leaders. They're not looking to the Bible as their source for guidance in life. They're looking to their leaders. And they're going to look to a political leader and ultimately to a religious leader. And they're going to listen to that religious leader and what he tells them to do. Whereas we have to gauge everything by the Bible. What does the Bible say? It doesn't matter what the religious leader says. It doesn't matter what miracle the religious leader performs. It's whether they're following the truths of the Bible. That's the key. What fruits are they bearing? So the people in Europe, unfortunately, are setting themselves up to be deceived and taken advantage of as the end comes. So I have no way of knowing whether the end time events will unfold slowly or quickly once they start. We don't know. We're told to be so doing what God has commanded us, and no matter how fast or slow the events come. We don't want to take the casual approach to prophecy because something isn't in existence today, and we can't be sure it won't be tomorrow. So day in and day out, our task is to be spiritually fit. That's what we have to watch and take care with. And there is nothing that will trump that. So if you're spiritually fit, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. So we need to respect whatever prophetic revelation God has given and allow it to guide us without our trying to force it to fit. So this ends our fourth Keys to Prophecy sermon. And I hope that these prophetic sermons have given you the equipment that's necessary to be able to understand how things are working out, to be able to see the basics and to see what's taking place. And hopefully it will stand you in good stead as we see the world and the trials and difficulties that it's facing. And with God's help, we'll get through it. And the main part is we want to be on the other side. And when the time comes for us to be a part of the kingdom, we'll be part of it. So thank you for your attention. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. And I look forward to seeing those who want to get online. And we'll see you on the Wednesday evening.